Okay, how about an hour of your phone calls now with Stephen Volk as we talk about his work, Fringeology, trying to explain away the unexplainable. Let's take your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Steve, did you stumble across a mystery, something that perplexed you, something that just boggled your mind when you were doing the book?
George, I mean, I would say that most of it did.
Good.
And look, that was sort of the exercise, right? That was part of it. I think the Ricky Searle sighting is something that boggles my mind. What he saw was so dramatic, such a large object over his head that just shot off, that I have no frame of reference for it, right? I have nowhere to sort of store that. And I also did some research into my family ghost story, and I found that one of the families who lived in the house after us also thought that it was haunted. And I write about that in the book. And that also just sort of knocked me for six.
Well, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That is the way to do it. We're going to take some calls with you in just a second. What do you think of Annie Jacobson's work? Her book was, and her theory, was that the Soviet Union launched a craft with genetically altered humans on purpose and crashed it here in this country to scare the heck out of us in 1947.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Jacobson, right, she puts forward this single anonymous source who says the 47 crash at Roswell was the result of this collaboration between Mengele and Stalin, and that the children were altered to look alien and sent into U.S. airspace. But I just have to say, first, as a journalist, she's got guts. I mean, in journalism, we tend not to run with anything from a single anonymous source. We need two anonymous sources. I mean, that's the standard we see in Woodward and Bernstein's legendary Watergate coverage, and which everyone became familiar with in All the President's Men. And I think we need to be careful before we break that rule, but I have to say, I think if you're going to do it, she did it the right way, the only way. She emphasized that she had one source for this and described that source in painstaking detail so people could make up their own minds about how truthful they would think this was. But I want to just – there are a couple parts of this that are really intriguing to me. Because first, let's assume for a moment that her source is absolutely entirely correct. And that's a big assumption, but let's make it for the sake of argument. This actually goes a long way toward vindicating the Roswell witnesses. I mean, if this scenario is true, they weren't fooled by a weather balloon, right, or crash test dummies. They were fooled by a high-level government operation and what they said they saw, a crash disk, little humanoid-shaped pilots with some very odd features, would be correct. And this would go some way toward proving my point, I think, and vindicating my thesis, which is that when something strange happens, we should be able to talk about it openly. I mean, eyewitness testimony is a form of evidence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And look, if we try to operate according to a scientific standard of evidence in every facet of life, society would grind to a halt and the legal system would be the first thing that would succumb. I mean, I've experienced this as a reporter. And you go cover a murder trial and the prosecution, at least here in Philadelphia, regularly says to the jurors, look, this is not CSI. The CSI is fake. The TV show that you know, where every crime is solved by some sort of scientific insight. Scientific evidence, truly scientific evidence, rarely exists in a court of law. I mean, it's happening more and more. It does happen, but it's rare. And so I just think that we need to be open to the idea that when people describe an event, it happened the way they say it did.
What do you think is going on with ghosts? Why do you think they're still around here?
Well, they're definitely not going away,
they're
right?
Going
I mean,
away.
I think that much is clear because they've been with us for thousands of years. And, you know, one of the things I love about Coast is that you've got so many different possibilities that are raised on this show as to what ghosts might be, right? From interdimensional things to some sort of being perhaps that was never in a body to, of course, the traditional sort of,
sure,
you know, deceased person.
The poltergeists,
right.
Everything.
And I'm in a framework right now, George, where I think that people need to entertain all the possibilities, right? From the prosaic explanations that skeptics put forth to all the more, out there explanations. Because, I mean, just looking at my own family's ghost story, I don't see a mundane explanation for it. I don't see an explanation that we already have on the table that someone's proposed that would tell me, hey, that's, you know, that's what that was.
All right, let's take some calls. We'll go to our wild card line in Arcadia, California, first of all. Al's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Al.
Yes, good morning, George.
Morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you both doing tonight?
Great.
Doing great.
Great. I have a question I wanted to pass on to you. Your discussions with Edgar Mitchell, there were reports that NASA were doing a series of telepathic experiments during their space flights, especially when the Apollo program, where the spacecrafts would go behind the dark side of the moon where communications would stop.
Right.
And did Edgar Mitchell at all elaborate or discuss anything in regarding to that?
He didn't get into that with me. We talked about that sort of thing, and he was, I mean, he conducts in his own experiment, as you're probably aware.
On the way back or forward?
Yeah, on the way back.
Yeah.
When he was done with his tasks and had that opportunity to sort of look out the window and reflect. And he felt that he had to keep that a complete secret at the time. You know, like he didn't want to talk about it. So, from his point of view, no, they weren't doing any sort of experiments like that. But that doesn't, you know, look, that's not to say that they didn't on some other mission.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, next up, Minneapolis we go. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Paul. I just wanted to ask the guest tonight how he felt about the difference in between altered terrestrials and extraterrestrials. And I'll just stop there and let him answer.
So by ultra-terrestrial, you're talking about as sort of a higher being or?
Beings from other dimensions.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I usually hear them referred to as like, you know, interdimensionals. I mean,
correct.
Again, you know, there's a guy named David Eagleman who put forth this idea of possibilianism, that we need to consider all the possibilities. And I think that UFOs like ghosts have been with us from the beginning in various forms. I mean, these stories go all the way back through history. And I think we need to strongly consider every last possibility that presents itself to us in our imagination and then test it as best we can. And
correct.
Right now, I mean, we're all still waiting for like some sort of smoking gun, right, that would indicate that visitation is definitely occurring. But I personally find it, look, I'm a professional storyteller, right? I mean, that's what I do for a living is tell stories. And
yeah.
I think in my job, and I think that for us as people and as a society, we need to be able to consider all these possibilities without just sort of laughing up our sleeve at them. So, I mean, I would, to me, they hold equal weight. They're equally possible. And I certainly enjoy, you know, considering them and reading other people who've you know, tread this path before me and thought about it.
Definitely. Yeah, and I definitely appreciate your perspective. And, there's so many different ways things can happen. And, yeah, thank you very much. I just wanted to put that out there. So,
hey, thank you very much. Have a good night.
All right, you're welcome. Is it going to be a follow-up to this book? I know this one just came out, but there's always number two.
Yeah, oh, I would never say never, George. I mean, as you said, this one just came out, so I'd like to enjoy that for a bit, right? And sort of just let this sit and see how people react to it and go from there. But, you know, Fringeology 2 is very much a possibility. I'm getting really nice feedback so far. I mean, it's only been out for not even 24 hours, but I'm getting really nice feedback so far, and of course that's encouraging. And you know, we'll sort of see how it does and go from there. Certainly, my interest in this isn't going to completely go away, so we'll see.
Did you enjoy writing it?
I loved writing it, and I'll tell you, George. I said before that I had some other things to say about lucid dreaming.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you, I had a different experience writing this than I've ever had writing before. And I had a kind of lucid dream while I was in Hawaii, in which I said to a dream character that, because I was going to come back from Hawaii, essentially, where I went for this workshop on lucid dreaming that Stephen LaBerge was running.
Sure. What island were you on?
The big one.
The
Hilo.
Big one. Okay.
And
we,
so,
we just built a studio there.
Oh, fantastic.
On the big island.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So, I was going to go home, essentially, and 2 weeks later begin to write the book. And I had a dream in which I'd asked somebody, essentially, for help to write the book, and they said, I don't know what they said, right? I was not lucid at this point. And they said something, but it left me with a bad feeling because I remember at the end of the dream, I was sort of walking off inconsolable. And I meditated on having a lucid dream about this, and I had one. And in this dream, the character, when I said to them, I've got a book to write, there was a little back and forth, and they concluded by saying, look, the book is already written. And it instilled in me, because lucid dreams are so vivid, it instilled in me such a feeling of confidence that it created this idea that it really was written. And when I came back, George, I've never done this before. When I started writing, I was writing 7,000 words a day, 8,000 words a day.
That's huge.
Unbelievable productivity. I mean, I'm used to writing, say, 1,500 words is a good day. And I was writing, there was a day I wrote over 10,000 words. And whenever I would start to feel the least bit nervous or anxiety stricken, I would remember this idea of the book already having been written. And the way I felt when I had the dream, which is that, yes, the book's already been written. That's great. It's already done. And look, I don't know what that was, George, but I do know that we should be open to exploring that, and we should pursue that. We should bottle it, right, so that everybody can have that kind of confidence in whatever they're up to. And I have to say that that feeling hasn't left me as I've taken on other projects, writing projects since then, because I'm back from doing a lot of regular journalism. I'm finding that I have that to call upon, and I'm writing with a bit more confidence now, and I'm more productive.
Good for you. Okay, let's go to Houston, Texas. Joe's with us on Coast to Coast. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Joe.
First-time caller also, so I'm nervous.
Good. Well, glad you're with us, Joe. Go ahead.
I had some crazy times back in the day. I'd be staying up late or whatever in my room, and I'm the living room, about 20 feet away or whatever, TV would come on by itself. It'd freak me out a little, go turn it off, and come back on another couple minutes later, right? And, that's not the only thing, but, I was wondering what you thought about night terrors, too, if you ever heard of them. I'm sure you've heard of them, but,
Well, night terrors are there. They're real, and they're petrifying when they occur to you.
Yeah.
And night terrors
are often used as an explanation for a lot of weird things that go on, from alien abduction, right, to other sort of
the old hag syndrome. You've heard of that, right?
Yep. And I've never actually had that experience for myself. I know people have had, and it is terrifying. And there is a real medical condition, but I don't think that it can be applied across this range of phenomena. I mean, the one thing I find intriguing about the abductees is they're not all sleeping when it occurs.
No,
and, if you talk to someone like David Jacobs, which I did, he'll tell you that, it's maybe about half who claim that they were awake at the time.
Right. And David thinks there's something evil afoot here.
Yeah, I know. And I find it really disturbing to talk to him because he comes off as a very, again, he's another one of those guys who...
He's very credible.
You sit down with him and he doesn't, he's saying things that seem outlandish, but he himself clearly presents, I mean, the guy is sane. Right, like that's not the issue here. He is a credible guy. So, I find these stories fun to explore, and I think sometimes, George, we just have to get back to that. Yes, we want to get to the bottom of them. We want to find out what's really happening. But in the meantime, we've got these incredible stories.
Well, I can't believe if we're being visited that these races are all benevolent. There've got to be some out there that are greedy. Evil, and would do whatever they could do to get us. And if you just look at the old Star Wars films, there were a lot of them like that.
I thought it was incredible when Stephen Hawking, I mean, lately he's been really drifting out of his territory quite a bit, right? And he issued that statement about, if ET's out there, we may not want to advertise our presence to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he also kind of hinted that there is no God. So that he's really going outside of his boundaries.
Yeah, he's really going outside of his boundaries. And then he called the afterlife a fairy tale, which, I categorically reject that, right? That there are people, again, you get back to an idea of eyewitness testimony. Yes, eyewitness testimony is often fallible, right? But it is a form of evidence. And there are people who've claimed right, to have visited it. So I don't think that that's a fairy tale. Nobody's claiming that they witnessed the Princess and the Pea, for instance.
Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Jen, go ahead.
Hi, yes, hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a qualifying statement and then share the most profound paranormal experience I've ever could imagine
sure.
happening.
Go ahead.
First off, you know, I have multiple college degrees and graduate work, so I'm not crazy. And I know without a doubt UFOs are real, as is the spirit and paranormal. And for the people out there who have experienced these things and have been distraught about the consequences mm-hmm. of talking about it, you know, in a way it is a gift. For when it is undeniable in our current culture, you know, at least the people who have experienced this can handle it. You know, they're prepared mentally for it. And also, I wanted to share my paranormal experience. I was out in a field, this was a couple years ago, and I was looking up at the stars. It was under Orion's belt, and I've meditated and I've had experiences all my life. I'm just a natural psychic. And this time I was doing chakra work and raising my kundalini. And have you ever seen like an Egyptian mask that has a snake coming out of its
yeah,
forehead?
Sure have.
Well, now I understand what that is and what that means. Because I had a kundalini release and it was like a golden snake. And it came up my spine, and it went out my third eye, and I was consciously flying through a different solar system, seeing a different sun and different planets. You know, things your mind just couldn't make up with that quickness.
Was this like an out-of-body for you experience?
Yes, it was. But it was with my consciousness. And once it happened, it was like, wow, you know, there's no guessing, you know. I know this is real. This is, and I understand, like the ancient cultures, where they got their astronomical knowledge from. I think a lot of it
they travel that way. That's how they travel.
That's right. They were able. It's like this spiritual technology that we have lost over the years that we are all capable of.
You know, there are a couple of ideas I'm just sort of thinking about as you're talking. That was a great story. And number one, I'm grateful for the family ghost story. I mean, I've certainly become grateful for it over the years because it gave me this, you know, an open mind where I am willing to consider these different possibilities. And something else I think we need to be open to when someone tells a story like this one is that it's very possible that the rest of us, you know, are proceeding about our lives and in whatever way we are, and we never have this kind of direct experience. And people who do this direct experience of something other are simply privy to knowledge that the rest of us are not privy to. And so she now, the caller, goes on through her life in a different way, looking at a different kind of world than the rest of us.
Well,
entirely possible.
We can learn a lot, Stephen, from these other people. Let's come right back. We'll take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, one of the original members of the Tokens, the group that brought us the Lion Sleeps Tonight song that hit number one in the charts, will be our guest for the first hour, followed then by astrobiologist Dr. David Darling, as he talks about the possibilities of life in outer space. And when we come back with Steve Volk, let's take your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Steve, did you come across any kinds of stories of evil people who had seen the devil? Did any of that come up?
Yeah, you know, in the time I spent with Lou Gentile, and that was really part of the research. So in a lot of ways, this research started for me back in a formal way back in 2006. And, you know, part of Lou's business was to investigate those sorts of cases. And I didn't get to attend any case like that myself, but the stories he told were unbelievable about seeing faces appear out of fire, about seeing a light come bobbing down a hallway toward him that mm-hmm. he even snapped a picture of. And I actually describe that picture in the in the book. Really, you know, alarming sorts of things.
Many alarming sorts of things. I mean, it's real. It's out there.
Well, look, George, people have been reporting this since the beginning, you know, and we've got to be responsive to that in some way and explore it. And that's why I say, again, I just feel like people should be able to tell these stories when they occur, so without feeling that sense of embarrassment about it or feeling like it's something they need to hide, so that people can look into it.
When you write to Fringeology number two, you've got to go down to Key West and do a segment on Robert the Haunted Doll. Have you heard of him?
I have not actually heard of Robert the Haunted Doll, and I feel bad about this because I was in Key West for a wedding shortly after finishing the book, and I didn't know about this.
This little guy is on display down there in a museum, and he apparently is so evil that people who just look at him encounter horrible things, bad luck, you name it. And there's a great story behind it, how he was made and created. He's very old. He's in a glass jar, and, you know, he gets offended if you take his picture, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, it sounds like maybe nobody wants should visit the doll.
Well, you can. That's your job now.
Right, right, right. There you go. There you go.
But you got to do that if you ever go down there again.
Yeah, there was a very Night Stalker vibe to doing this book. You know what I mean? Like the old TV show.
Yes, with Darren, right? McCarran, was it?
McGavin.
McGavin, yep.
Yeah, and I liked that show a lot as a kid. And in fact, it's funny. I mean, along with, as I got older, things like Watergate, it was actually the Night Stalker in part that made me want to be a reporter. It looked like a romantic sort of life.
Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Mark, east of the Rockies. Thanks for holding, Mark.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments that when I was younger, I could remember me having dreams that to where I could fly out of the complex that we were staying in. And as I got older, it seemed that it would get harder to fly out of my body and get higher to where I don't know, like I just couldn't remember, you know, it getting harder and harder to do the same thing in my dreams.
Well, the older you get, the more you create a block, and you might have been doing that in it. I'm not sure it was a dream. You might have had some actual out-of-body experiences there, and you were truly, truly traveling.
I do think, George, that the older we get, right, the more involved we get in the world, the exterior world and the life that we're living and all the responsibilities associated with that. And obviously, I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time. One of the reasons it's great to raise children is because they give you that sense of magic back a little bit. And so, I mean, there is this sense that the older you get, the more work you have to put in to experience something.
How did you weed through the subject matter, the topic matter?
You know, I actually, when I decided I was really going to go for this, George, and just go ahead and sort of out this old family ghost story and go from there, I actually sat down I was in New York at the time. And I sat down in a bar, and I ordered myself a beer, and I got a cocktail napkin.
And wrote your outline.
And I wrote my outline. And you know what, man? The thing held up. There were a couple of chapters that fell away. But in general, I think one chapter changed, the order changed slightly. I mean, it was uncanny the way it ended up working out.
Did the waiter or waitress say, sir, what are you doing?
It was really weird because I was sitting in a fairly crowded bar, and it was as happy hour was beginning, and it got more and more crowded and more people around me, and I was there, and I ended up filling, I think, three napkins. And I was there writing really, really small, scribbling as fast as I could to get it all down. Mm-hmm. And I had the sense, that people were wondering, what is this guy up to?
First-time caller, Nick, truck driving in Louisiana. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Hey, Nick.
Thank you. I want to share two or four experiences with you guys. Whenever I was about 12 years old, me and five of my friends went down to a bridge around where I grew up that we called Graffiti Bridge because of all the spray paint on it. We had heard that there was a ghost of a woman that was bound to there because long ago before it was a developed bridge, she had wrecked her car and she had ended up drowning in the coulee there. And we decided that the story was false, and we didn't believe in anything like that. and we were actually taunting the ghost from the bridge. And then we could hear footsteps in the water, and we got extremely freaked out because we've also had heard that there was devil worshiping activities in the same area. So we got on our bicycles and we started to retreat from the location. And whenever we got maybe a tenth of a mile away from the bridge, we turned around and we seen this white figure up from the middle of the bridge and very slowly coming towards us. So we just completely panicked and went straight back to our homes.
But
wow. When we went back probably a week later, because we had talked ourselves up into going back to prove to ourselves that it was probably somebody that was down there, from the position that we seen what we seen, the person would have had to been at least 15 feet tall to make that sort of appearance. And between six of us, we could never explain it other than it was a ghost. And then on a separate experience, whenever I was much younger, probably closer to 6 years old, I was riding with my mother in a car. And I was gazing through the window on the drive home, and I seen this sphere of light in the sky. And I pointed out to my mother, and she also saw it. And it wasn't an outer space light. It was within our atmosphere. Not much. It may have been around the same level as the clouds. And then all of a sudden, it made like a U-turn, and then jolted back in the opposite direction again and then shot away. And my mother couldn't explain it to me, and I couldn't, you know, like I was six, so I didn't know what it was. But I never did forget that memory. And then the other two.
Okay, well, I don't have time for any more. I've got 15 people online here. But you could write another book with all these stories, Steve.
Oh, very, very easily. And I mean, there's topics in it and explore. Like, I was curious about going to Point Pleasant, West Virginia now to write about, because I did Stephenville. So what's it like in a town a year or two after something strange happens, right? What would it be like in West Virginia now to be in a town that has this whole legacy, right, of the Mothman? And that's something that it potentially would end up in a second book.
Thanks for the stories, Nick. Anna Marie in Bozeman, Montana, west of the Rockies. Hi, Anna Marie.
Hello.
Hey.
Say, first, George, I wanted to tell you something, and then also you and Steve something.
Okay.
I was wanting to get a copy of that Dr. Stephen Panacek show the other night.
Okay, well, we don't sell tapes anymore, but I've got a suggestion for you that is even cheaper. If you want to send me an email, I'll tell you how you can do that, okay?
Okay, my son Dirk has done that, and if you'd bring attention to that.
Sure thing.
Okay. On Ian Ponant's show one night, he had a retired military black ops man on.
Okay.
And he was saying what these boomerang-type things and these huge, gigantic triangles that people are seeing, they're holograms that are sent out by the military black ops people, and they're trying to scare people to death. And he says, maybe down the line we'll tell you what it is. He says, but then we may decide not to.
Well, some people believe that's exactly what's going on.
That's what they said on Ian's program.
Yeah, some kind of scare tactic that might be happening.
Well, can I say something about that, George?
Sure.
I felt like the Stephenville case, that fascinating aspect of it to me was the way the military seemed to want to involve themselves in it after the fact and have some sort of effect on the way people perceived it. And, you know, the same thing would be true in the Area 51 scenario that Annie Jacobson's describing, right? That this story was given to her source. Why are they involving themselves in this way? What else, you know, what is going on?
And who's the source?
Right.
Let's go to John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing? Wonderful to talk to you. I've a long-time listener. As a young man, I started listening back probably in 97, 98 and caught the Art Bell things. But I'm one of the emerging artists, Transonic Johnny, that you had played on September 5th.
Super.
Yeah, the song Hana has kind of really picked up, and I released an album, which has gone now 35 different digital distributors online.
Good
so
for you, John.
Thanks to you guys. It's a wonderful show. But the most interesting thing, I live in Ahwatukee, which is my house is approximately three-quarters of a mile from South Mountain. But what's going on in my house right now, this happened last night. There's been rappings at my master bedroom door. And in the middle of the night last night, I'm kind of, you know, in a deep sleep, and I feel something pressing down on my bed, and then the comforter started moving around, and I thought it was my chihuahua, you know.
Sure.
I'm a very rational guy. I've got a professional degree, and I'm also a professional musician. And as it turns out, this incident has been going on now for approximately a month, and it has been really, really perplexing to me.
It's like every night?
No, not every night. It's like two or three times a week now. You know, and last night was the most dramatic one because the actual comforter was moving off of the bed. And this just kind of ties into exactly what you were talking about. And this is the first time in my adult life over the past several months that I've actually, you know, experienced something like this. That I'm completely perplexed. I, you know, would like to get a priest or something in there to bless the house just because it's bothersome. It's waking me up at night. You know?
Oh, yeah. I would guess it's really beginning to become a pain, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's not scary or anything. I cross myself and say, please leave. And, guests on your show have, taught me to handle something like that, because all of a sudden it's happening to me. And I just can't really believe it. And my wife is perplexed by the whole thing too. So
how long have you been there?
I've lived in this house now for 5 years, and things just started to increase over the past couple of years. Just weird things have been going on, and like I said, this has been the weirdest thing, because in the middle of the night, I'll get a rapping on the door. The door will kind of open up a little bit, and then I will feel like it feels like a woman entity. It's just something gentle that starts to press on the top of my bed, and I never thought that I'd be talking about something like this. Really, it's just absolutely fascinating.
And you've had an interest in it though your whole life.
What's that?
You've had an interest in it though your whole life.
My interests have really been in extraterrestrial and UFO types of things. I've been following anything from the Chariots of the Gods. That was one of the very first books I read as a young kid, and ever since then I've been watching the skies. And I'll just end my vignette here with, back in October of this past year, I was listening to the show, and then all of a sudden I saw this gray triangular object, and it was moving at very high speed at a low altitude, and it went from, because my patio looks over the southwest, and a lot of cactus and trees and things like that here in the community, and this thing, it was triangular, arrow-shaped, not a conventional. You know, it looked almost like a stealth aircraft, but I know my airframes and things, and this was something completely different that I've ever seen in my life. And so just in the past several months, these extraordinary phenomena have been occurring, and I have no explanation for it, and I don't know, you know, I think I'm going to consult a local priest here and get the house blessed, and just because it's bothersome now. It's been happening like two or three times a night.
Two things. It would be interesting to trace back and to when this stuff happened and see if there was any change in your life that created some difference in the way maybe your
looking at things, you know what I mean? That maybe you're more open to things now. And the other thing I find just sort of deeply ironic about this is, you know, here you are all these years, perhaps, you know, interested in seeing something in the sky, and then something completely different happens to you, something that you weren't looking for at all.
Absolutely. Let's take some final calls. We'll go to Joe in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, Joe, thanks.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, Steve.
Hey, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to relate a story to you, if I could. My mother told me years back. This is probably about 66. She was giving birth to my older brother, and, well, there was massive complications. My brother passed away, and my mom actually died, and then she was brought back. And anyway, this happens about a day or two later. I guess she was in horrible pain. She was really, you know, horribly down and upset from losing the baby. She said one night, you know, family had been around a lot. But one night, I guess she was, you know, after visiting hours or whatever, she was by herself at the hospital. And she'd kind of just given up on life, really.
Mm.
And she said all of a sudden she just rolled over and looked, and there was a nurse sitting by her bed.
Hmm.
The nurse was, like, very fair, like, fair skin, fair hair. She noticed she had no name tag. She said she'd look into the nurse's face, into her eyes, and said her pain would just, we realized her pain would start to lift. It would go away. So she would look at her, and she would just roll back over and, I guess, maybe rest for a while, start feeling bad again, roll back over, and the nurse was always there. She was sitting by the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I guess it was getting probably close morning, they didn't speak to each other. And she finally rolled over and just had, she could just muster words. She said, "Why?" And the nurse just said to her, and I think she says, God had his reasons.
They always have their reasons. We're out of time here, Steve. I want to thank you for your work, Fringe. And how do you get the book?
Now it's in the stores. It's at Amazon.com. You can go to my website at SteveVolk.com. But, you know, you can't miss it.
All righty, my friend. Be well.
Thanks very much, George.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.